Hello and welcome to Dictate Podcast, the podcast for Dictate the Game, the website where you can find all sorts of guides, experiments, stories, and all sorts of FM content. My name is Fernando, aka Roxanne FM, and I have the pleasure to introduce to you those who join me. We have Kate, aka All the Place. How's it going, Kate?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thanks a lot. We also have FM Craig. How's it going, Craig?
Not too bad, thanks. Yourself?
Very well, thanks. And we have a very special guest today. We have Sealand from, well, Sealand, the football match content channel. How's it going, man? Great to have you here.
That's great. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks a lot for joining us. Well, it's been a while since we've done one of these. We actually had a failed one in the middle. I don't know if Editor Craig's going to get you to hear that one. But we actually had the new patch be launched since we last had a podcast. So I wanted to ask you guys what's been some of your favorite things from the podcast, maybe some likes, some dislikes, some stuff you wanted to get fixed, maybe that finally got that that treatment. So what's been your favorite and your likes and dislikes from the latest patch for FM21? I'm going to start with you, Kate.
I knew you were going to start with me because I have nothing. Honestly, I haven't really noticed a huge difference with this update. The big thing I noted, I don't use long throws, so but I've noticed that people who do when I'm watching it, they've been nerfed somewhat, and you know, a couple of other small things, but I really haven't noticed very much, honestly.
Yeah, I think. Particularly, I also don't really use the long toe strategy. I'm not a fan of the Delap strategy. But I have heard that about the long toe. I also think there's been quite some updates with the database, particularly with, of course, some young kid in Borussia Dortmund. I don't know if everyone heard of him. But what about you, Craig? What's been your likes or dislikes from the latest patch for FM21?
Well, just to add a little bit to the long throws, they have been nerfed. I agree with Kate on that, but I've noticed they do still work, but only if you have people who are actually good at long throws. So if you've put someone who was never good at long throws before but it still works, that's what's been nerfed. So it's a little bit annoying, but I suppose it's a bit more realistic compared to what it's been. But also I've noticed penalties are just given so much more easily now. Even if it's a legitimately good tackle in the area, it just feels like the referee will just, or rather the match engine will just give the penalty regardless. It just gets a bit frustrating.
I think it's all found a lot of a realism recently, though. The long throws obviously got nerfed, which was good. I mean, I'm a huge long throw merchant. I love long throws. But if we're talking about realistically how often a long throw is scored in the game, I still think that they are scored a lot more often and they're much more threatening than they are in real life in Football Manager. I think that you should either have a trait, like a player should have a trait that says they can take long throws, or, you know, or else you just can't take a long throw. I think the fact that everybody, even if they have like an 8 in the long throw attribute, can still get a lofted ball into the box from the side is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, especially if you just dumped your 6'3" or 6'5" centre back up into the box for a long throw, then it's still just as overpowered as before, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well I was going to say it's me particularly not having used them really, I haven't noticed much of a difference, but I did notice, particularly when perhaps playing some online games, that people who use them are really dependent on them sometimes. Like, I think there's a fair chance that if you are using them, it's a really important core part of your tactics. So it being nerfed, I think, probably has really affected people that really relied on it to be a source of scoring constantly, perhaps.
That makes sense.
Sealand, you've been really praising the match engine when it first came out. Then perhaps a little later, you were a bit critical of it. How have you found the changes made to it with the patch, or any new things that have been included in the latest patch? This is, of course, 21.3 and 21.4, because we've been that long since we haven't done a podcast, actually.
Yeah, I'm happy they finally got around to doing the update, mainly because Makoko's in the game now, and we were waiting for that from, honestly, the time that the game came out. We're sitting there going, you know, when is Yusuf and Makoko going to actually make it into the game? And they finally added him. But in terms of the match engine, look, it's a huge improvement from last year. It was a massive jump. Now, there are some parts of it that are still frustrating and unrealistic and painful. The open field kind of decision making and marking of center backs has not been corrected. It's still really bad. Obviously, the way the match engine works is when they get within the orbit of a player, there's kind of a gravity of that player, and so they get drawn to them, or they'll assume that another player is going to go pick somebody up, and that's not the case. And so they just drag themselves way out of position in those countering situations. It ends up leaving you completely screwed sometimes if you have, you know, three guys back to defend two players attacking forward. All three of the guys will go towards one guy and then give the pass open to the other player, and that has caused a ton of problems. Outside of that one issue, though, in those specific weird, small-numbered countering situations, I think that this match engine is just a massive step forward. And if you can take a step forward like this every year with a match engine, I think in 1 to 2 years, you're probably going to have one that not anybody has a huge issue with.
Yeah,
I absolutely agree. I think also there's an issue with diminishing returns. You know, I mean, taking this huge of a leap forward every game, I think, will be a bit tricky, because every time you improve something, it leaves like less of a margin to improve on it. But I definitely think this. I've read and heard a lot of people a bit angry with FM21 in general, and I think I've even seen a tweet saying where it was the worst FM of recent years or not. And I don't know if it was the change in the interface or perhaps the new match engine or whatever, but I really enjoyed FM21, and I also find that the jump from FM 20 to FM21 has been much easier for me than the jump from 19 to 20. So I've been really happy with the match engine and the game in general, I think. It's time to move on to the home dressing room, the part of the podcast where we discuss the latest and greatest content from the Dictator Game team. I'm going to start with you, Craig. What's been your favorite piece from the latest, I think, few weeks since we've done the last podcast? You have quite a few range to choose from.
Quite a few, but I'm going to go with one that was probably the most recent, I believe. The top 10 youth academies in Scandinavia is written by Mikkel. So effectively, he just goes through sort of categorizing all the top 10 youth academies in Scandinavia based on their facilities, academy graduates, and any current talent. And this is personally very useful for me and for my scouting on one of my series at the moment, because it will just save me a lot of time going through all the different Scandinavian countries and all their teams, of course, because there's so many different quality players and wonder kids even that come out of this region. I know it's not the greatest region in terms of producing great players, but for one that's in Europe and one that's close to England especially, it's a good place for me to start. So I'm very happy using this article as sort of a guide, if you will, for me in the future.
Yeah, I think Scandinavian football, particularly I think Danish and Swedish football, is really coming leaps and bounds over the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. I think quite a few clubs have been like really going forwards. I'm thinking Michelin, Nordsjælland, to name a few. So I think it's a really great article by Mikkel, a native Swede. So yeah, he has some really close first-hand experience with the matter, and I think it's a great article. What about you, Kate? What's been your favorite piece from the DTG team lately?
I'm going to embarrass you, Fernando, because I'm going to say your piece. Trial and error.
Oh no!
Guide to trials. I really thought this was really useful because I don't really do a lot of lower league management, so I don't do a lot of trial signings for the most part. Because for the most part, I'm doing you know, paid transfers. So I found it really informative and you know, covered all the basics all the way up to sort of some of the finer points of using it well. And yeah, I just really enjoyed it.
Well, thanks a lot. I mean, the point for it, I think we've been seeing, particularly in the last couple of weeks, a real focus to the lower league management part of the game. And me being myself, I'm someone that really enjoys lower league management. I thought it's something that I do quite often, you know, bringing the batches and batches of free players, you know, trying to find the one that actually knows how to cross or the one that actually knows how to shoot the goal. So I think it was something that I had a lot of experience and think there's not that much info on that process. I think some people might consider it a bit like exploitive because you're bringing like 30, 60, 90 players to your club, to your lower leagues club, and that dining room is going to be really cramped. But I think managing the lower leagues, you have to take any advantage you can, and doing that batch system that I described in the article has really helped me, you know, going forward with the club, not necessarily winning the Champions League with a 10th tier side, but really just finding players that can actually play football and that can propel my club forward. So I was really happy to write it, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. Steven, you're not part of the DTG team, sadly, but you also produce lots and lots of content. So what's been your favorite content, your favorite video or podcast that you've been doing recently for FM?
It's a shame. I was going to talk about the trials too. I just think that's something that when you play the game, and particularly if you're like me, you play the game and you didn't grow up in a country with a kind of rounded understanding about how the global transfer market works. And like, there's no equivalent to trials in American sports typically. So I was foreign to the concept. And so when any opportunity you have to introduce people that are starting out in Football Manager to the idea of trials, it can completely change their life, because I abuse it every time I'm managing in the lower leagues. But recently I made a video where I had a data analyst, a guy who was getting his degree in data analytics, do his data analysis project on how players developed and try and create a formula, some sort of predictive model that fell within standard deviation. So some sort of number that said, when you had this much professionalism, you would develop this much within a range of, you know, from this to this. And we got pretty close to creating something that fell within a standard deviation. And I'm really saying a lot of words that make it sound like I understand what was going on, but I really didn't. This was me just bringing in a data analyst and being like, hey, you can do this, right? Or he came to me, was like, I have this idea. I was like, if you can do that, then this is awesome. And what we did find was some pretty serious larger trends, which were the professionalism is far and away the best attribute for development. Like, we all knew it was a very important one, but when it comes to predicting how well a player reaches and keeps their potential ability, we found that professionalism is hugely important. Determination has an effect. It's statistically significant, but it's way behind where professionalism was. And perhaps the most surprising part of it is that through the tests, ambition was actually found to not have any statistically significant impact on a player reaching their potential, which surprised me a lot, because that makes ambition not good.
That really does surprise me, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Wow.
No, that was, that was the end of the thought. You're all good. But it was ambition just lagged behind the other two. And he always used phrases like, you know, significant. There was no, you know, it didn't fall within any variation where it said ambition definitely helps a player develop. Yeah. I would imagine that it does just a little bit, but it says something that it doesn't enough for it to be like included in the report is significant enough with player development.
Yeah, I think it was a really, really interesting experiment. And of course, I think we all watched the video and was really, really fascinated to see. Particularly the amount of work that went behind it. I mean, this data, as you mentioned him on the video also, and I just can't. I'm terrified of the amount of number crunching that he must have been doing behind. It's like terrifying.
The best thing is we had a meeting So he's Portuguese. His English is fantastic, but he's Portuguese, and so he was learning some terms to explain things to me. We had a meeting and went for 3 hours before I filmed the video because he had to explain to me what he did, how he did it. You know, because I'm looking at these spreadsheets and I'm just like, what the f- is going on in this? Like, I know it's just numbers and colors, and you see a little bit of the spreadsheet in the video. I didn't share the spreadsheet because he wasn't sure if he was allowed to, and we also, like, we've broken Google Docs and Google Sheets in the past, and we would have to transfer it to some other host site if we wanted to, and we don't really know how to do that. But we show some of the sheets in the video, and it's just like this wall of colored numbers, and he was just walking me through it, like, and this is, you know, with 10 injury, this is with 15 injury, this is with 20 injury. You know, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Amazing work. Has anyone any questions for Sinan? If not, we move on. What do you think?
I just wanted to say how that video combined with other videos that you've done previously, Zealand, on different personalities and how they affect different players. I just think it's fascinating how intricate all the detail is that Football Manager put in, how different personalities affect players in their development differently. Obviously, this would be something that that would happen in real life, but the fact that it's gone into so much intricate detail in Football Manager, and it's been able to be broken down by a data analyst is quite fascinating when the findings finally come out.
The thing to keep in mind is always that the whole game is just numbers. The whole game is a bunch of numbers interacting. Like, that's the entire game. And what Football Manager does a great job of is hiding the fact that it is just numbers interacting. So instead of seeing, like, well, this player has 12 professionalism and 15 ambition and 10 controversy and 8 sportsmanship, you see a personality. You know, so you have a way to quantify it with real life. You have a way to bring all of those numbers and say, well, this guy is just, he's fickle, or he's ambitious, or he's a model citizen. And Football Manager does a great job of taking the numbers out of the game. And what I try and do sometimes, because we're really trying to understand how the game works, they don't tell us that, you know, they're not going to tell us any actual details, which is good. I think it helps preserve the magic of the game, because if we knew the actual details of the match engine, then it really could be an esport, but there would also be a definitive right answer. And based off what we know, there's still an art to playing Football Manager. There is not a definitive right answer. Like, you, with all the information you can gather, sometimes you have multiple choices. You have to trust your gut. You have to trust your eye, like real life sort of feelings. And I love that. But it is cool to remind yourself that the numbers are, the whole game is just a ton of numbers that have been masked in a user interface, basically.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's this famous phrase from Marcelo Bielsa, actually, the Argentinian coach who's currently managing Leeds. He said a few years back that if football players were robots, he would never lose because he's so attentive to detail and analysis of rivals that he thought that if his players were always to follow his instructions perfectly, he would never lose. I think that FM is perhaps a case of the other way around. You know, it's the robots pretending to be fallible humans. So it's very interesting to, you know, pull the rug on that and see what's going on behind. Absolutely.
Well, they are. They make them fallible because they hide information from us. So you never get all the information on a player in Football Manager. You know, and there are players whose potential are rated super high, but in the game, it's not actually that high. But there's certain players, there's some hidden attribute or dynamic in the game that I've never been able to find, and they obviously don't want you to be able to find it, that makes certain players, even if you have a 20-20 scout, you know, 20 judging player ability, 20 judging player potential, they'll think that player is going to be better than they are, no matter what.
Yeah.
And then that player they don't have good potential, they can't reach it, and it goes the same the other way. I mean, sometimes there's players that are rated lower and then all of a sudden they explode forward. So they do a good job of hiding this stuff from you and makes it feel like the opposite of Bielsa, I guess. It's all gut and what do you see?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the art of playing FM, like you said, and they do a great job of doing that. Moving on, we're going to get to the away dressing room, as we call it, which is the part of the show where we comment on perhaps our favorite content from, you know, the last couple of weeks. from other creators outside the DTG team, such as yourself, Stellan. But I'm going to start with you, Craig. What's been your favorite piece of content from other creators outside Dictate the Game?
Well, I'm going to go to Twitch for this one, a particular streamer who is quite new to the scene. He only started, I believe, about 5-6 months ago. But from his streams so far, not only have they been enjoyable, but they just sort of hook you in terms of the story he's trying to create on the series that he's doing on Twitch. And I'm referring, of course, to a streamer known as BennyDFM. So he's done a Twitch series so far based on taking over a team in the capital city of any of the top five big leagues in Europe. So he started in London. Right now, he started with Dulwich Hamlet, a small lower league team in like the National League South, if anyone's familiar with their work. And so far, he's done quite well with them. He's taken them as far as the championship so far. He's just started the season. But what he's done, he's created a team that's not only gone through the divisions, but also brought in like members of his chat as well as some of the players in the game. So not only has it been enjoyable to watch, but just the engagement with his chat and building of his community over time has just been a joy to see, and I've really, really enjoyed being a part of it.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. Where can we find him again for anyone interested in following his stream? Sorry.
So he's known. His name is BennyD_FM on Twitch, and I believe he goes by the same name on Twitter. Yeah, he's on the same name on Twitter as well. So Twitch and Twitter, you'll find him on at BennyD_FM.
That's fantastic. What about you, Kate? What's been your favorite piece of content from someone around the community?
Well, mine's got kind of multiple layers to it. I'm going to go to Dodgy Gamer, who released a whole series of minor international tournaments, like the WAFU Cup, the West African Football Union Cup, which is open to West African football nations, or the COSAFA Cup for South African nations. And there's all these different little cups all over the world, and he's made them for FM. And he's doing a series, well, a series of series, if you will. They're little mini-series called Postcards From, and where he picks a team and goes through one of these tournaments. And so we're getting to see all these different teams from different places. He's done Curacao and Sierra Leone and what was the other one that he did? Was Mauritius, maybe? Something like that. I can't remember. Anyway, and it's just it's a wonderful little set of short series that the Postcards From tend to be 2 or 3 episodes at most, and then he moves on to the next one. And I've just been really enjoying them. Just terrific work.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. I think there's always a big commitment when trying to see a series if it's been going for a long time, and perhaps you're a little late to the party because, well, there's already in jokes. You don't know what's going on. You don't know what's happened. So I think short series are really, really way, perhaps, for someone who can't really commit to watching or reading or following a long time series to really get into it. So then again, where can we find this content by Dodgy Gamer?
Dodgy Gamer is spelled dodgy, like dodge, but with an extra E on it. So 2 E's, Dodgy Gamer, on YouTube and Twitter. You can find him. He's a terrific creator. He's pushing for 1,000 subs. So do give him a watch, and if you enjoy it, give him a sub.
Absolutely. Stellan, I go to you, of course. Again, you're not part of the DTG team, so I guess you could technically name us, but what's been your favorite content from the community around like latest weeks?
Well, since we've already talked about a lot of this stuff that you guys do, we'll go outside the realm here. I have loved...
That's fantastic.
Going to YouTube Fox in the Box has been doing, he did a video in particular called The Art of a Segundo Volante, And he's done some other videos where he talks about how to use specific roles. And I'm really impressed by this and love videos like that because I have been scared to do them and don't quite know exactly how to do them and how to properly explain how to use a specific role in the game because there's so many different directions that you can go with it. I honestly, maybe I'm just picking this because I'm impressed that he has the guts to make a video like that and do enough research and feel confident enough to talk about how to use a specific role, something so strange. This is Segundo Volante as well, because for me, I got to test stuff like that out, and he has, and I just haven't been able to. It's just so impressive to me, and I'm happy there's somebody out there doing videos like that because it's a type of video that I don't think I could do, right? And I like to try and cover a lot of different bases and do my research and get a lot of different things covered. And he is covering something that I can't, and I really enjoy it. And you can find him on YouTube at Fox in the Box. He's really turned a corner with his content, I think, recently, and done a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Another friend of the Joe, I think, I might be giving up a spoiler here, but I think we could have you in that very same chair you're occupying right now, abstractly speaking. I watched that video and I think it was absolutely fantastic. He gives a great explanation, a really detailed explanation of how he uses the role. Me myself having a bit of experience with the Segundo Volante, having done a bit of a guide on it on my blog as well. I think it's the type of content, like you said, that's really hard to do for YouTube because you have to keep it dynamic and you actually have to test out so many things. You have to also do so much research. So it can, I think, perhaps my format, you know, the Britain blog is a bit, it goes less against you when you are doing that type of analysis. So I think doing it on YouTube is absolutely fantastic. And it was a really, really interesting video to watch. Now we come to the part of the program where we, sorry, the show, that's a bit of Spanish dropping into the my speech. Now we come to the part of the show, we have to put you through the press conference, of course, being the star of this show, I think. We have quite a lot of questions for you, Zidan, from the community and the DTG team. Of course, you can find those at the show notes, sorry. But I have to ask him first, where do you find the inspiration for new videos to? Where do you get the inspiration for new videos?
So I think the key to thinking of new video ideas, it's a two-part process. One, I have a Google Doc, right, that I can pull up on my phone. And the Google Doc can basically be accessed from anywhere. So anytime I'm walking to class, I'm playing games, maybe I'm sitting in class. I wouldn't tell my professors that, but maybe I'm just sitting there and something. I just get hit with an idea. You have some wild idea, or you're reading some DMs and somebody just says something and it triggers this other, like, well, what if we did this? Or what if we tried to figure this out? I just open up that Google Doc and write it down. And it's a couple of pages long, and most of the ideas on it are stupid or impractical or things that I'd never be able to do. But I never thought I'd be able to study player development statistically, and we got that done eventually. So it's this process of always keeping it available, like 24/7, just wake up in the middle of the night and write down an idea on this Google Doc. And then the other part of it is just having the guts to, it's kind of like 51% of YouTube, is that once you start making money on YouTube, you start to rely on the money that comes from YouTube, right? Everybody relies on money from different income sources. And so I have, you know, three different editors on the payroll, a thumbnail editor, and we have a podcast producer who's just starting to join the team. Like, we have a lot of different people that rely on getting a paycheck from me, essentially. And so what's important to continue to do is that even though you rely on that, the amount of money that's coming in from YouTube on any given month, is you have to try new things, right? So there's videos like Saving Saves has turned into a huge kind of the first series we've ever done on YouTube. And I had no idea if that was going to work or not. If I titled a video, I Save Your Saves, before you see if it's successful or not, is it going to be successful? And if it's not, then it's just kind of a waste of a video when I could have sat there and gone through the details of, you know, how to scout specific regions or how to sign parts of your staff or more basic tutorial stuff, which is what the channel was built on initially. But trial and error is the second part of the process for video ideas, is having the willingness to, even though, you know, there's like livelihoods on the line, to be able to go and say, okay, we're going to try this video. We're going to use Football Manager to find the best 11 from Africa and back it up with numbers and facts. And is that going to be popular or not? I don't know, but it's something fun that I would enjoy watching. And so you just have to go do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you start doing it as more of a profession, professionally, and not so much as a hobby, it really puts some pressure on you to where stuff works or not. Because, of course, if you're doing it as a hobby and your article really doesn't go anywhere or your video really doesn't get the views, well, it's tough luck and you try again. But when you have to pay people for it, it gets really serious. I wanted to ask you guys, particularly Kate and Craig, who also do some YouTube videos. Particularly you, Kate. What's your process like? I mean, does it compare to Sealens? It's a bit different. Do you like? What's the difference between what he just described and what you do to create your content?
I use a voice recorder to record my ideas when I have them. That's the big difference.
Fair enough. What about you, Craig?
I use a Word document, to be fair. Any idea, a bit like Zealand, any ideas I bring up, as I think of, I just literally write down. And if I know if I get stuck later on, oh, I'll just come back to this document and hopefully some inspiration will come from that.
Yeah, well, apparently the only difference is where you store your thoughts. But yeah, moving on. Someone asks, how much did your fast rise in followers on Twitch? I'm guessing YouTube as well, because your channel absolutely exploded. How much did it catch you by surprise, if at all?
I don't think you ever process it exactly, because you spend your entire life, when it becomes your job, you spend your entire life living inside of what's the next video. Right. So like the video that is coming out tomorrow, it has been done for 4 days. Like I've recorded the next two videos already. My brain's even farther than that in the future. And so you're so involved in what's happening, where it's going next, that when you sit back and you look at, okay, well now there's, you know, 95,000 subscribers. And when I started streaming on Twitch for the first 2 years, I had 10, 14 average viewers or something. And after 2 years of really hard work and innovation and trying a bunch of different things, and now I average over 1,000, you know, it's just, you don't actually sit down and appreciate it. You don't sit down and process it nearly as much as you should. So in terms, did it catch me by surprise? Yes. Did I know that it was possible? Once I realized that what I was doing on YouTube was a hit, which was probably about 13 months ago, 14 months ago, I think last January, New Year's, January 2020. That day was the first video that I had that got 1,000 views in the first day. And that was like 3 months after I started doing the YouTube stuff. And when that happened, I was like, wow, you know, this is really moving. That's really cool. I want to have, you know, a bunch of videos get 1,000 views in one day. Like we're reaching some people that are watching all of these videos. And from that point until now, it's been this blinding sprint of just pushing myself and doing everything I think we should do to be able to expand and keep helping people with Football Manager and being entertaining at the same time. But to answer your question, since I'm just wandering around, it is, yeah, absolutely. It's a surprise. Like you have to believe, if something like that's going to happen, you have to believe that it's possible. And I believed it was possible. Did I think it would happen this quickly? No.
Yeah, I was thinking what I heard you. I remember hearing CGP Graves, actually, another YouTuber, an education YouTuber in this case, also an American, by the way. saying that he when he talked to another to other YouTubers who actually had their channel had become popular and had exploded much like yours, that they kept doing this thing where they said like, oh my God, I met, I don't know, Paul McCartney, my life is so crazy. But it got to a point where they were like pretty big YouTubers, so he a bit resented the whole my life is so crazy moments. And I remember him saying, you get about a year of being a popular YouTuber to say my life is so crazy for meeting Paul McCartney after that, just a famous person. Do you ever get those moments where you said like, oh no, I don't know, whatever happened and I can't believe this is going on? Or are you like already settled on the fact that you're big on YouTube and people are just going to know you?
It stays virtual for me. I've been recognized in public one time. So it's not an overwhelming experience to be me walking down the street. I live a very normal life. You know, I don't think I'm anywhere near a point where I'm not. But the internet interactions are cool. There's a guy named Terrence Boyd who used to be in the U.S. national team. Slid into my DMs one time and just said, hey man, love the videos. And we talked a couple times and we message every once in a while. And that was cool. You know, I told my friends, I'm like, hey, do you guys remember Terrence Boyd? Yeah, he sent me a message. He's like, oh, that's neat. And then I think meeting Dr. Benji for the first time, because I'd spent so long talking to him, or not talking to him, but talking about him, just, you know, to other people. Like Dr. Yeah. Benji, Ben does a bunch of controversial things, right? He always gets into some row on Twitter. Like that's just what he does. His wit bothers people. It bothers me sometimes, but he is the godfather really of Football Manager in a lot of senses. And when he sent me a message the first time, the way it works is he sends a message and he's like, hey, love what you're doing, let's call sometime. That's the first message. And we just had a 3-hour call on Discord and talked about life and content and what I was doing, what he was doing. And it was really, really, really neat. Then I had a moment the other day because I made a lot of friends streaming when I was doing what everybody else was streaming to probably 5 to 15 people, having a good time. It was a hobby that I was determined to make something of, you know, but it was on the FM based stream team at one point. So all those guys like Keg and Matza and Clates and those guys in particular really befriended at that point in my life. And I was talking to one of them the other day and it just made me realize like, well, yeah, remember when we used to sit here and talk about, oh, Ben's such a, you know, God, he's so annoying. I can't believe he said this on Twitter today. Well, now I have a podcast with him, you know? And so I had at a moment just the other day, I was like, wow, we've come a long way where it was like a logical next step for me to have a podcast with this guy that I used to look up to in a lot of ways. So that's probably the biggest moment recently.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it has really, really changed. I think for you particularly that dynamic. But moving on, someone asked, how are you enjoying your new podcast for Spotify? Of course, you're doing the history one and you're doing another one.
Yeah, we have three. We have four. I've recorded the first episode of the fourth one, which is an interview podcast, which is not about me at all, really. It's just bring people on, talk about their lives, and it's going to be a great podcast, but it hasn't come out yet. The history one is a passion project. It's really the first thing that I've let myself do. That it has nothing to do with Football Manager. It has very little to do with any part of like the Zealand name or brand or whatever, right? Like it doesn't relate to that at all. It's just something that I love history. I was a history major in college. My dad was a history major. My brother is a history major. Like we just love history. We're obsessed with it. My dad read me history textbooks instead of bedtime stories when I was a little kid. Like not textbooks, you know, more interesting history books than that. But it's just something I've always loved. And I know that if I took the time to do the research, I would be able to make a good podcast. And something that people enjoyed, because when I do the streams, sometimes I go down some sort of history tangent. And, the number goes up instead of down. Like nobody leaves when I'm talking about history and explaining it in a cool way, because the only reason you would not like history is if somebody boring explained it to you. Because history is anything but boring. It's like television, but in real life, crazy stuff happens. Like all the time. You just have to be able to tell the interesting stories. So that was the basis of the history podcast. And then Ben and I just have great chemistry, as much as he can annoy me sometimes, and as much as I do annoy him intentionally a lot of the time. We're just great together. And so we talked about doing a podcast and came together. 20 Good Minutes was an idea for a podcast name I'd had forever, and it's been a blast. And that seems to be the one that the most people listen to. That seems to be the one that has been the biggest hit. And then there's the Zealand podcast, which I film with my editors. I had James Lawrence Alcott on there the other day. And that is just talking about more the behind the scenes and the content. Why did we do this video? How does the editing process work? How did I meet certain people? I don't like talking about myself too much, which makes me being here talking about myself right now a bit of an irony. But that podcast is designed to pull the veil off of the process a little bit more. And if you watch the YouTube videos regularly, then the Zealand podcast is essentially where to go to just get more of that sort of stuff.
More Zealand, absolutely.
can I interrupt you? Yes. Yeah, go.
Yeah, of course, Kate.
I was just going to say, Zealand, if you really like history, how do you feel about alternate history?
Alternate history is a lot of fun. I really enjoy the sort of, you know, if these civilizations were right next to each other, what would have happened? Or a lot of that stuff, especially in modern history, is really interesting. Okay, so obviously I like modern history more than I would have thought at the start of this question. But
the reason... Go ahead.
No, I was saying the modern stuff, because we know a lot more. That's the thing is... You know, you talk about World War II, we have emails between people, we have all of this stuff where we're able to dissect, like, well, oh my God, what if he'd actually done this? That, you know, somebody would have won this battle, it would have flipped the whole war. Like, when you go back to, you know, more ancient history, you talk about Charlemagne, who is probably one of the most 100 most influential people in history, formed what would eventually become France and kind of brought Europe out of the initial Dark Age. When we don't know a single provable fact about that guy until he became king, which right. Like 20 something years of this dude's life, we know nothing about. And I can tell you what Churchill had for breakfast the morning of D-Day. Right. So alternative right. history is probably more fun in modern times.
True. The reason that I ask is I've got a new series that I'm starting in the next week or two, a Let's Play series, where I've had a database designer put together a database that is, we're calling it the 1914 project. Basically, the borders of this database are untouched from 1914, no world wars. So Austria-Hungary is still in the game, the German Empire is in the game, the Russian Empire is in the game, and so on and so on. All Ireland is still united, and lots of little Easter eggs all throughout the game. And it just, you mentioned liking history so much, it just struck that the was a good chance for me to slip in a plug. So
I was gonna say fantastic plug.
No, that's perfect, because that is actually awesome and really interesting.
Yeah, I was just hearing you talk, Kate, and all I could think of is, can somebody think of the Balkans? I mean, that team is gonna be something if you have the Balkans all united. But yeah, I mean, sounds fantastic, and I'm also kind of a history geek. Tried to major in history, didn't because of things in Argentina. But yeah, I absolutely love history, absolutely love football history. So it's really interesting to hear people who join, share the love of past things happened. Moving on into the last two questions, we have quite a few, but I'm going to have to choose a few. I'm going to go with what got you into FM, because as an American, I can't think it's the regular path we often hear from people in the UK and the rest of Europe. How did you get into FM?
Right. This is everybody's favorite question, because there's this assumption that in the United States, there's just not a lot of footballing or soccer going on. And it's a fair assumption to make, I think, of the US probably 20 years ago. But now it's not too far-fetched to be involved in something like this. Like, obviously, if I'm getting recognized in public, then it's by Americans that also watch the stuff. The United States is the second largest base of viewers of the YouTube channel and of the Twitch channel. And so there's a lot of people that are interested in it. But Football Manager itself is not promoted in the US at all. I think that's the main issue, is not being a fan of the sport, because soccer is now the fourth most popular sport in the United States. It's ahead of ice hockey. It's really close to baseball in terms of number of people that say it's their favorite sport. So it's on the rise, and that's evidenced by the number of talented US players that are now, you know, in Europe. You can see it directly correlating with how more popular the game is getting. But Football Manager was just, one of my friends said, because we played FIFA career mode for years, we always complained about it, but it was the only thing out there where we could manage a team and progress and sign young players and all that stuff. And one of my friends one day, who's a mod in the channel, his name's Antarx, is his gamer tag and such, and he basically messaged me. He's like, hey, there's another game. If you want to try it, it's going to be on, it's on sale. We can buy it. And it's like Football Manager, it's like FIFA career mode, but better. And so we bought it and we tried it a couple times and we couldn't get into it because it was so, you know, so complicated. And we would start a save with, he was Real Madrid, I was Barcelona, and we would get like a week and had no idea what was going on. And that was it. Eventually, about a year and a half later, I finally cleared that threshold of, I understood enough about the game to actually start really playing it. I wasn't good, you're right, but I could just keep, I could progress. You know, I wasn't going to get blown out. And eventually I won the Champions League in that save. I started playing it during lectures my junior year of college, just because it's the perfect game to just throw on in the back of a lecture. And that was it. I was hooked. And I bought the game every 2 years after that. And then when I started streaming, which was a completely separate decision, I looked around. I was like, well, what could I stream? Like, I want to stream. It looks fun. I have no idea how it's going to work, but I feel like I should stream a game that I'm good at. And what game did I play obsessively and had started to win Champions Leagues in? It was Football Manager. And so I just kind of started streaming Football Manager, and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, because I was aiming the question not so much, of course, to the soccer in the United States, but to the game being there, because it happened to me. I mean, probably Argentina is one of the most crazy, football crazy countries in the world, but the game here wasn't really big until a couple of editions back. I mean, I was thinking, you know, in England you get these people who go like way back to FM 07, FM 02, CM 93, and you think, well, they had the game going there for a long time. And perhaps in other markets, despite of how big football or soccer is, you didn't get the game, and you get like you said, I mean, FIFA was the only thing. I think growing up, I mean, we're probably around the same age. I mean, my first football game was FIFA 02, and FM was like, I had never heard of it. So it's really interesting to hear how you got into the game, because I think despite coming from different football cultures, I think the way to the game is very similar in markets where it hasn't been publicized as big as, you know, the big names, you know, the FIFAs, the Pro Evolutions, that kind of thing.
Well, one of the interesting things that people don't know about here in Canada, a few years back, and I'm by a few 10 or 15 years back, the number of kids playing football moved ahead of the number of kids playing ice hockey in Canada.
Where it's like the only sport.
Where ice hockey is pretty much the only sport. And
thus, Alphonso Davies was born.
Exactly. Exactly, and we're starting to see the fruits of that with Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David and a lot of great young players that are coming through, because, you know, they grew up playing the game, and it's starting to show.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really reaching critical mass. Sorry, Craig, what were you saying?
No, I was just going to say, I think in America at the moment, it's more a retaining people's interests as they get older. I believe there's a lot more kids now playing soccer. I coached soccer in California area a few years ago, and there's a lot of young kids who are playing soccer more and more now, but as they get older, they start to move into that sort of 13, 14, 15-year-old range. They start to get more interest in the likes of NFL or baseball. It's almost like they just seem to lose interest quickly in soccer for some reason, and I think that's just sort of the key area really of where you can just sort of try and keep a lot more people interested in soccer going forwards.
That's just how it, the problem is soccer doesn't fit in the American sports system. It just doesn't. So every baseball and basketball and football all work the same way. You play in high school, you play travel ball, and then you go to college for it, or you get drafted. And if you go to college for it, then you play well, and then you get drafted into these major leagues that aren't clubs. They're, you know, they're professional franchises, unless it's baseball. Baseball has, you know, reserve teams and kind of lower league teams that you work your way up through, like soccer. But, you know, basketball and football, there's none of that. You're on the team or you're not. Basketball's developing a little kind of reserve team system a tad, but soccer doesn't fit into that. If you're one of the, you know, if you're a great player, by the time you're 17, you should be around the first team at a club. But in the United States, you should be theoretically just getting ready to go play in college and then get drafted. And so I think that the ladder that the United States presents to young soccer players is just not as attractive, and it's not straightforward at all. And the key to great nations, Brazil, England, Argentina, of course, Portugal, Spain, Germany has been fantastic at this, is there's a straight line. If you're good enough, you go to the next level. In the United States, there is absolutely no straight line for professional soccer players. You see every player that is huge now has a different route. The Christian Pulisic was playing club and not high school, and was then called up to a youth U.S. national team, has a huge youth tournament, and because his grandfather is from Croatia, he gets a European passport so he can leave before the age of 18 and goes to Dortmund. You see Gio Reyna, who's able to get a foreign passport because his grandfather is Portuguese and is able to do the same thing and go to Dortmund after coming up through an MLS academy, which Pulisic didn't do. Then you have someone like Josh Sargent, who has to wait until he's 18, comes up through a different MLS academy. But most of the country isn't under the purview of any MLS academy. It's a huge country. There aren't even 30 top-level professional clubs in the U.S. with these academies. You know, the second-tier teams don't have them. So there just isn't a ladder, I think, for kids to follow. That's huge.
No, there isn't.
I was going to say, I think the other thing about American soccer particularly is the pay-to-play issue, where kids, as they get older, are expected to pay more and more to be able to have the privilege to play on a travel team. The kids are expected to sort of self-finance those, whereas in the UK, of course, most of those travel teams are part of bigger clubs,
right?
And the club absorbs the cost. In the US, they don't. The kids have to pay for it. And so, you know, a lot of kids get priced out of the sport.
Yeah, that's a very important thing to notice, is that none of the great soccer players, footballers from the US are poor. And this sounds, it sounds crude, but there's a reason for that. Like, Pulisic's family is well off. Gio Reyna's family is obviously well off. Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, Zach Steffen, these guys are all from families that are not poor.
Yeah.
And it's a sport like every other sport where typically the best players become so great because they're determined to play their way out of a bad situation.
Yeah.
And yeah, the United States has not made it available. I mean, think about, like, the favelas of Brazil are famous, right? The mean streets of Paris are famous for being this kind of baptism by fire for guys to fight their way out of. There's one slum in Nigeria that's produced like half the Nigerian national team, like in Lagos. In the United States, it's a rich person's sport right now because of the way it's set up, without senior clubs absorbing travel costs for youth teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wasn't aware of that, but it's really interesting. I'm going to have to cut you there. One, because the runtime is going away, and also because I can hear Luke, our manager, who's also an MLS maniac, MLS fan, absolutely, pulling his hair because he isn't here to talk about it. Ceylan, one last quick question before we wrap this up. Favorite save of any version of the game?
So my favorite thing in Football Manager?
No, your favorite save in any of the games you've played.
Still got to be Bate Borisov. There's something special about that. Yeah. There's something special. I don't think I could do that over again if I tried 50 times. We won the Champions League in less than 10 years with a team where half the team has to be quote unquote Belarusian. Like it was crazy. And the year before we won the Champions League title, we didn't even make the Champions League group stage. That's something that a lot of people forget. Now, it was a huge upset. We were good enough to be in the Champions League group stage and the knockouts, honestly. But we got upset in the final qualifying round before the group stage. And then the next year we won the whole thing. So it was a huge turnaround and a great team. And the oldest person in it was 25. I mean, we really honestly should have been winning the Champions League like 4 or 5 years after we actually did. But we managed to get everything right in the tactics for one game. And it was a really special, special moment.
Yeah, I can absolutely. I was, like I said, I was guessing that it was going to be that one because it was. I remember following your content up to that point, and it was really special when you did it. But yeah, that's all we have time for. Sadly, we're already way past the recorded time. So thanks again, Ceylon, for joining up. It was really interesting, really fascinating to hear you with a wide array of subjects. Actually, I believe we covered a lot of things.
Well, thank you. Yeah, this is a lot of fun. I'm glad we were finally able to do it.
Yeah, it's been coming up a lot. Also, thanks a lot, guys, Kate and Craig, for joining up. It was really good to have you here.
My pleasure.
No problem. It's been awesome.
Yeah, it actually has. But yeah, if you want to read any of the articles we mentioned in the past hour, actually, you can find us, of course, at dictatorgame.com, and you can find us on Twitter at dictatorgame. And if anyone has been living under a rock and wants to find your content, Zealand, where how can they find it?
It's just to type Zealand in wherever you YouTube, Zealand, Twitch, Zealand. Except I don't actually have the Zealand name on Twitch. It's Zealand with a capital I in the middle instead of an L, but I'm salty about that.
Yeah, it happens sometimes. Well, that's all we have time for. Thanks again for everyone who joined, and thanks again to your listeners and to the editor guy. That's been all we have time for. Bye-bye.